politician say? JFK, vote away, what else do I have to say?
We didn't start the podcast. It was always burning since the world's been turning.
This is We Didn't Start the Podcast, an album-by-album rewatch of Billy Joel's nautical career.
I'm Adam Ragusea. I don't really like Billy Joel.
I'm Meg Donahue, and I really do. This episode, we'll be discussing Billy's 11th studio album, Stormfront.
Stormfront. It's a big one for him.
It's a big one for
him. It's a big one.
It is a big one.
It was very, very successful.
Mm-hmm.
Very successful.
So successful.
And it's his penultimate studio album.
Mm-hmm.
But it's clearly the climax of his late career, right?
Yeah.
Because
so the countdown clock is on.
Oh, yeah.
To the ending.
Oh, yeah. No. It's definitely, this is the top of the mountain for Joel.
Right.
It is certainly all the way down from here.
Mm-hmm.
In really every sense.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
In terms of his familial relations, in terms of his physical appearance.
he goes bald after this.
Yeah, exactly. This is really, it's right after this where he starts the sport coat over the black t-shirt look,
right.
That's just like, don't look. Just don't look. It's just a big shadow in here, you know?
This doesn't concern you.
This does not concern you. Focus on the sunglasses.
Right, exactly.
Okay? And yeah, I'm wearing a goatee. I like goatees. It's not because I have a double chin.
It's not a thing.
All right?
God.
Jeez. Okay. Well, anywho, so this record came out on October the 19th. Meg, what else there happened in 1989?
Nathan's Famous opened a hot dog stand in Moscow, thus ensuring that Muscovite dude bros would have a place to protein up after hitting the gym.
Too much sodium, boys. Disney's Little Mermaid hit theaters, and when Billy heard the line, "Look at this stuff, isn't it neat?" he thought, "Now that's a lyric. I get a whole album out of that."
Boris Yeltsin gained a seat on the Supreme Soviet of the Soviet Union, which he promptly fell off from because he was just that drunk.
Oh,
what?
Yeltsin drinking jokes.
What? Am I a comedian in 1989? Yes.
For Weekend Update, this is Meg Donahue. As the Eastern Bloc disintegrated, I like to think that Billy mused about playing a concert atop the Berlin Wall, at which point the East Germans said, "Oh, hey, you know what? We were just going to take that thing down. Drat!"
1989, the year Billy mastered geopolitical problem solving, tying boat knots, and love.
Joel got back to what he really cares about in 89, the issues.
He really did.
So a lot has happened with our boy since we last checked in with him.
Yeah,
right?
I think it's been about, what, three years?
3 years, okay? Whole lot happened.
Mm-hmm.
So he did this tour in Russia, right?
wasn't it Concert with a K?
Yes, it was the studio album and accompanying VHS release was called, like, the, you know, Cronut or...
we'll go with Cronut.
Cohept. Like, it's the Russian word for concert.
Right.
You know, whatever. And... It's like, I think that Billy wears this as a badge of honor. Like, I'm so bold. Like, I went behind the Iron Curtain.
Right.
I'm so dangerous. But it's like, think about it this way. If you're, you know, on the Supreme Soviet of the Soviet Union, and you're thinking, okay, if we let American rock star play, like, who are they going to pick? They're going to pick, like...
the most milquetoast one they can find.
Yes.
They're not going to send Bob Dylan over there.
Yes. This is the international community verifying that you are anodyne.
You know what cracks me up about all of the pop stars in the late 80s is they all seem to think that they were Winston Churchill doing these cultural exchanges. And, you know, I think it was Sting had the Russians, and then Billy decided to, you know, glasnost a bunch of stuff. And
he's going to glasnost that shit.
Glasnost that shit. Take an aspirin. You just got glasnost.
Okay, so check him glasnosting here. So I don't know if you've ever seen this, but this was an incident, and it's when they were filming the Cronut DVD, VHS rather, Betamax. and Billy got angry. Have you ever seen this?
No.
Okay, watch this.
I'm gonna take control, get a hold of my emotions. Stop lighting the audience. Why does it always seem to hit me in the middle of the night? Stop it!
What is it? What is he talking to?
Number, I can always dial. Let me do my show, for Christ's sake.
So what's going on here?
What's cracking me up is you've got like this Howard Jones guy in front of him
playing guitar.
Hey, playing guitar, just
having
dancing
a great
having a great time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're playing guitar to Sometimes a Fantasy.
Right? There's no reason to be sad.
There's no reason to be sad, but Joel is sad. So the deal is that the filmmakers who are filming the concert are lighting the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Joel is upset about that because he says, you know, people, they go to a rock concert, they want to, you know, they want to get crazy, you know, they don't want to get all lit up. They want to be in the dark, you know?
Right.
And they're just like lighting the audience to get like some shots of the audience, which you're going to need for a concert film. Right.
Right.
Billy doesn't like this. And so watch where this goes.
Oh, it's not real good. Sometimes a fantasy.
Tell the people what happened.
He just flipped his keyboard.
Yeah. Now what's he doing?
I think he just kicked somebody.
He smashed
his mic stand.
Yeah.
He is so rock and roll.
I know.
He's so rock and roll. But the thing about Billy being rock and roll is now he's hurting himself because he's paying for these people to do this concert.
I know. You hired this film crew to film your show for you. They're working for you. So how about instead of throwing a fucking temper tantrum like a child,
right.
God damn it with these baby boomers. Like, you're the authority figure now. Do you understand that? Just say, hey, you work for me. I would like for you to stop lighting the audience. Thank you very much. Let's resume with the program.
But we have already talked about how Billy is not the most cohesive psychologically. That would just be too healthy of a thing for him to do.
Jesus Christ.
It's so much more effective to, you know, kick some guy.
So dangerous, this guy. So, yeah, so that caused an international incident or something or other. Okay, so then what else happened in Billy's life since we've last seen him?
He had a baby.
He sure did.
And then he switched producers.
He
is no longer with Phil Ramone.
With Philly Ramone.
And Steggy. Steggy's gone.
Doug Steggs?
Doug Steggs is no longer.
I thought he died.
Ooh, I don't know. Eventually he will. I don't know if he has yet.
You're making it sound like he got fired, but like...
I think he did.
I think he died.
R.I.P. Dougie Steggs. Sorry, guy.
I mean...
I just thought obviously he got fired.
There's no way to verify this, right?
You know, yeah, we'll never know.
It's just a candle in the wind.
Yep,
you know?
We'll never know.
We'll never know. So I found this... I found this amazing SiriusXM interview clip of Billy, contemporaneous Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Old Sat Fad. OSF?
OSF.
OSF Joel?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so of OSF Joel talking about Phil Ramone and what made him such a great producer, and this is maybe the most Joel thing I've ever heard in my life.
He understood the atmosphere of creating an atmosphere for recording artists. Whenever we would get stuck recording a song, we couldn't figure out the arrangement, we couldn't figure out the rhythm or the instrumentation. Phil would do something to distract us from wanting to leave. He'd go, oh, let's get some Chinese food or order a pizza.
So to put this in dog training parlance,
right.
Clearly Joel is very food motivated.
He's food aggressive. Let's get some Chinese food.
So he just, you know, if you're his producer and you need him to focus, you better have a bag of treats.
I love how Phil is like so great about, you know, creating an atmosphere, just this atmosphere, you know, just like
pizzas everywhere.
Pizzas everywhere.
He walks in the studio and there's just candles and pizzas. All right, let's get to work.
Right. I need some carbs and some silk scarves.
So things he said got kind of stale with Phil and the band. And he decided to get a fresh start.
He did.
So he took Liberty with him.
Fun fact, he actually was looking for a new producer and he talked to Eddie Van Halen.
Mm.
And Eddie Van Halen, Eddie
Van Halen was just like, listen, I heard about your guitar playing. And I got to work with that, you know?
Right. He asked Eddie Van Halen to produce this new album. And Eddie Van Halen's like, no. but here's Mick Jones. And Mick Jones was
the guy from Foreigner.
The guy from Foreigner.
Insert, I want to know what love is.
I want to know what love is. Want you to show me.
Yeah, that's Mick Jones.
That is Mick Jones.
Not the singer, the ugly one in the band.
Yeah. The band was he's a guitarist, right?
Yeah, and he wrote like most of the songs. Well, the singer actually sued him saying, dude, I wrote all of those songs with you. and you didn't give me any of the, you know, money.
And I hope, like, Mick took his guitar and just smashed it over the guy's head. Exactly. Smash it! No! Yeah.
Mick smash!
No! So he approached Mick Jones, and Mick Jones said that he would love to do Stormfront. And boy, you can tell Mick Jones' fingerprints are all up on.
His very glossy fingerprints.
So glossy, so produced, so many layers that are unnecessary.
Yeah, lots of cocaine.
So much cocaine.
So much cocaine.
In this incestuous world that we live in, everything comes back to Lindsay Lohan, I guess. So Mick Jones is the stepfather to Samantha Ronson and Mark Ronson. Lindsay Lohan was dating Samantha Ronson for a long time. Lindsay Lohan has the lyrics to "I Go to Extremes" that's from this album tattooed across her upper arm.
Oh.
The inside of her upper arm.
Is that the most basic thing that's ever happened?
I think she was wearing yoga pants when she did it, eating some yogurt.
God. Just a basic bee would love the basic bill, right?
I mean, there are so many other. If you're going to go to extremes and get a tattoo of "I Go to Extremes," there are so many better Joel songs to get the lyrics from.
Sure.
Okay. Shut up, there are. It's Cold Spring Harbor. I got that tattooed on my lower back. It's a great song.
There's not a song called Cold Spring Harbor.
I got the entire lyrics of the whole album tattooed across my back. Yeah. I'm a Joel fan.
But the ink gun, the speed was too high, you know? So the whole tattoo is just like 70% the size that it should be, you know? And just like,
right.
You know?
Right, because as we know, the album was mixed too high or too fast.
So did you really have to spell that out for people?
I did. I wasn't sure if everyone would remember.
Wow. You're taking this way too seriously.
I am.
Yeah.
Some of us have integrity in our work.
So the big thing that happened in Joel's life since we last checked in with him is that he found out that he did not have any money.
Yeah, he was poor.
He was poor. Did you read about how he discovered this?
Didn't he? I didn't read about it, but I do remember wasn't Elizabeth's brother that was his...
Yes, so it was his first wife's brother who was his accountant who basically stole or lost, probably more like lost, all of the money. But how Joel discovered this was that he was talking to like one of the execs at Columbia Records, and they were just talking rich guy stuff, right? And Joel says, yeah, so you know, Christy wants to move out to the Hamptons, and you know, so I gotta sell my place in the city so that I can buy a house out in the Hamptons. And the Columbia Records exec says, Billy, you're one of the most successful recording artists in the history of the industry. You should have enough money for more than one house. Like, why do you have to sell one house in order to get another house? That's like what the plebs do. Okay. You should be able to have like 35 houses.
I imagine they're doing this skeet shooting, you know, doing rich guy stuff.
Skeet shooting. But that's, I mean, do you skeet shoot in Long Island? I mean,
if you're a rich guy, why not? You're going to do it on the top of a building in New York, and you're just going to let like the skeet, like detritus just fall on the plebs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it falls so far that it just disintegrates in the atmosphere. Burns up in the atmosphere. Exactly. That's right. Or that's what they tell themselves.
Right.
But in fact, it's like killing homeless people.
Right.
Because this is New York in the late 80s. And so like there's just crackheads down there.
All over there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so they're just like up there and they're just like, you know, all right, shoot, pull.
You can have more than one house.
Yeah. So Bill decides to look at the books and he's just like, oh yeah, all of this money that I made, it's like not here.
It's just gone. it's just gone.
And he ended up having to like tour. I mean, the reason that he made this record and that he like toured on it incessantly was basically he had to kind of start from scratch in terms of making his fortune again. Like he had to. So anyway, so here's old fat sad OFS Joel in front of his ships talking about where the Stormfront record comes from.
The Stormfront album in '89 was
when I found out all this stuff was going on and fired my manager and sued people left and right. It was a real nightmare. But it made for good material. This was...
No, it didn't.
No, it didn't.
Trauma. You know, this was drama that was going on here. And that's why the album ended up being called Stormfront. There's a Stormfront coming. It's going to hit the fan. And boom, sure did.
I'm going to kick a guy. I'm going to smash my mic stand.
That's right, exactly. Just, when you cross Billy, you better be ready to see a keyboard just coming right at you. Right at you.
Woof! Let me do my show!
For Christ's sake! That is such an old person swear, too. I mean, that's like
For Christ's sake! Yeah. Can we talk about the album cover?
Yes, please.
It is only recently that I realized that this album cover does not depict a backpack.
You know, if I'm looking at it, I can see maybe why you would think that. It's actually a storm flag.
Is that what it's called? Is that the official nautical term?
It's a storm flag.
Heist the storm flag.
Heist it. It's I guess the flag that you wave when the winds are really high, like the highest they can be.
Yeah, exactly.
And still have the ability to wave a flag.
So wait, sorry, what you're supposed to do in a storm, okay? Don't go below or anything like that.
Wave that
just
flag.
Take that flag, go out and just wave it. And
guys, it's windy. Get inside.
No, so I think it looks. I mean, to me, it always looked like a late, you know, late '80s, early '90s JanSport backpack with like the two tones, right? So it's like there's the red on top and then the black on the bottom and then the zipper.
Which would be back to school.
Yeah, and in my defense, I mean, how this record was. Its corporeal presence in our house was in cassette form, right?
Right.
And so the resolution was really low, you know, it was really small. And it was like, it was, what do you call it? Like portrait instead of landscape,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because it's a cassette.
Because it's up and down rather than
side to side, mm-hmm. right? So it was the dimensions of a backpack.
Just keep like digging it deeper and deeper. It was a backpack. I swear it had a pencil on it. I swear to God. Thermos in the edition I was at my house.
I did have a Billy Joel Trapper Keeper.
Lisa Frank and Billy Joel together at last.
Is how I need you and how you needed me too. That hasn't happened for the longest time.
I noticed that you didn't put the big song on this.
I wasn't sure if we should. Do we have to mention the name of our thing? I also didn't put Stormfront on this.
Well, who cares? I mean, we basically got it. I mean, there's a Stormfront.
The pressure's low. It's going to, I mean, that metaphor does not work.
Yeah, because I think the whole point is that the pressure is high. Though the one interesting thing about the Stormfront song is that,
so produced.
Liberty is laying back a big old beat.
Yeah, he is.
Bass drum is on 2 and 4.
The beginning reminds me of Joe Cocker's You Can Leave Your Hat On.
Yes. Well, Billy went ahead and actually admitted in an interview that I read that he was inspired by this song. So Peter Gabriel's Sledgehammer.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And what's funny to me about this is that it's like, Billy, you're so freaking basic that like...
Put on your yoga pants, bitch.
You couldn't even have been inspired by the original item, which is like Memphis Sound Soul, you know, Stax Records. And like you had to be inspired. The white guy had to rip off another white guy. Ripping off the black guys.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So he's getting it, you know, twice diluted.
Twice, yeah, exactly. At this point, it's just like one part per trillion.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. You don't want to freak out the suburb people with black music.
Yeah. But okay, let's listen to the song.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South
Oh, sing it.
Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe.
I love how his enunciation of Marilyn Monroe is like, it reminds me of when he talks about tonic and gin in Piano Man. He's just, if he's not going to be bothered by the fact that the emphasis is not on the first syllable of Monroe. It's Monroe, but he's like, that's not going to get in my way of my song.
Nope.
Okay?
Nope. I'm breaking rules right and left.
Exactly. So.
Rules of syntax, rules of good taste.
So, I was listening to this song the other day, and it occurred to me that I know where he got that song from, too.
Where?
I will play it for you. It came out 2 years earlier, which is perfect. He's generally like 2 to 3 years behind the zeitgeist, right?
It takes him a minute for culture.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake.
Yep.
Snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid.
I have a hurricane, listen to yourself, turn down to the tone, knees, to the turn down.
And then wait for the chorus. Big anthemic, simple chorus that just repeats the same line, interspersed with verse litany, right?
Right.
It's the same damn song, except this one is way better.
So what makes this... Let's go ahead and really, you know, put some analysis on this.
Uh-huh.
What makes this song better, you think?
Because it's not so basic.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm going to use that term more in the kind of dictionary sense. It's just like, you know, Joel takes this idea. And again, I suppose you could say that R.E.M. was ripping off Dylan, Homesick, Subterranean, something or
others. Subterranean Blues.
You know, he takes this idea and then just does the most simple thing he could possibly do, which is just list facts. Right?
Right.
And whereas, like, with, you know, this era of freaking Michael Stipe, where he's just this, like, totally, like, mysterious, like, you know, wood sprite.
Pansexual,
you know?
Wood sprite.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, what the fuck is he even talking about in this song? Like, it's just all this obscurity and wonderful visual imagery that's, like, really ambiguous. And some of there's passages of the song that make sense. I mean, but, like, it's just, I mean, maybe it's too far. I mean, it's overly cloaked in mystery. It's obscure to the point of being gibberish.
Mm.
But at least there's just something intriguing there.
Right.
Whereas, like, with Joel, it's just kind of like, again, taking subtext, making it the text. Fuck it. I'm going to go with text, you know?
Right.
And it's just like, I'm just going to list things that have happened since I've been alive.
Right. But do you think that maybe I'm going to go ahead and play the devil's advocate here? Mm. He is explaining.
He does look like the devil in the video.
In the video?
Because he's got the sunglasses. He looks like Al Pacino playing the devil in that lawyer movie.
Right,
right. He's got the black sunglasses and there's flames behind him. He does look like...
Pacino!
Yeah.
Damn it, Keanu Reeves! I remember that movie.
What was that movie called?
The Devil's Advocate?
Oh my God, and you were just about to say you're going to play the Devil's Advocate.
Yes.
All right, play the Devil's Advocate.
Should I do it in Pacino? Come on, give him a break. No.
This is the worst Pacino I've ever heard in my life.
Pacino has the worst Pacino.
Good point.
Do you think that this song was a hit because it is the life experiences of, you know, the baby boomers? Said he was born in 1949.
And the baby boomers, because they're the most self-absorbed people in the history of the planet, are just like, oh my God, I totally want to listen to a song that's just about me.
Yeah.
You know, and really makes no comment about it. Makes no, you know, it really, it's like, it's, there's no, he's not saying anything about this period of history. He's simply saying, oh, here, it's just like flipping through the family photo album. You know?
Let's abstract that even more. Do you think that's perfect because the baby boomers are not the most reflective people in the world?
I don't know. I mean, but they're also like these people who like love to, I mean, it goes back to him like flipping the piano and getting angry at himself. Like, you hired these people, tell them what you want them to do. The baby boomers love to disavow any responsibility for any of the messes they've made. We didn't start the fire. Hey, we didn't do it. It's fucked up before we got here.
Yep.
It's like, yes, it was fucked up in some respects before you got here, but like, you're the one that took all of the money and
did all the drugs
and destroyed all of the environment.
Yeah.
You know?
And you kind of wonder, like, if there were a Billy Joel character throughout history, what would that be like? You know, like somebody just singing a song about the Napoleonic Wars. And you're just like, damn.
I think they called them chroniclers, right?
Right, yeah.
The bard
would... Let me play this on my lute.
Yes, exactly. Regale the audience with the... With the tale of King, you know, Edric.
Right. King Edric.
Egbert and Eggnog, you know.
Billy through history.
On a clock on a Saturday. The reg shuffles in. There's an old man sitting next to me. Making love to his tonic engine.
Now, this is a personal favorite of mine. It's Downeaster Alexa, because this is when Billy has embraced another social cause of the Long Island. Oh, God, it's such a good song. Of the Long Island fishermen who have been regulated out of any kind of livable income.
Well, I'm on the Downeaster Alexa.
I mean, come on. It's so good.
Sound. I have charted a course to the vineyard, and tonight I am Nantucket bound.
I love how like he chooses the two most bougie places you could possibly sail to.
Right.
The fucking vineyard.
Right, yeah.
What are you going to get, a cottage?
Off the island, you know, off the coast of Rhode Island.
Jesus Christ. I found an amazing clip of the Joel talking about this song.
I hope it's epic.
It is epic.
OFS, Joel, going to help the people.
It's mid-period OFS, so it's on the way to OFS. It's 2001 at one of his master classes, which is where you sit down and shut up and listen to the master play at you, and you don't actually learn anything, at the University of Pennsylvania, going Ivy League.
I know there's a fishing community out on the East End of Long Island. They always refer to the East End where I live as the Hamptons, like, you know, like... You know, like the Hamptons, all these Hollywood people who go out to the Hamptons. Well, I live there year-round, and I don't go to Hamptons parties, and I don't do the Hamptons
sure.
thing. I just live
just
there
hang
all
out
the
with
time.
Fishermen.
So I know the guys who live there. Mm. So I know the fishing community, and they're trying to shut these guys down because they're not, like, you know, politically, environmentally, like, correct. They actually try to make a living by catching fish. Excuse me. You know.
Burn. Burn, Congress.
I'm whipping out my Steve Martin. You know that
me.
I'm pissed when I whip out my Steve Martin. Okay. So what I would like to say right now is fuck you, Billy Joel. Okay. So I researched what in fact this was all about. Mm-hmm. Okay. So first of all, the reason that, and it was actually the state environmental authorities in New York, the reason that they prohibited the catching of striped bass off of Long Island, which is what this song is all about. You know, they say that I can't catch any stripers, you know.
Right, yeah.
Is because, well, in the late 80s, it was because the fish were filled with PCBs. Polychlorinated biphenols,
absolutely.
I think is what they are.
Nailed it.
So it's this industrial waste product that came from like the production of like electronic components, like transistors and stuff like that. So, and places that did like manufacturing of appliances and things like that have terrible PCB contamination. And up in the Hudson Valley, you had a lot of factories like that. It would come down the Hudson River and then go into the bay,
the Long Island Sound,
the Long Island Bay, the Bay of New York,
Striper Bay,
And the striped bass, they're high up on the food chain, and so they just get filled with the pollutants of all the smaller fish that they eat, and they're filled with PCBs. And when people eat PCBs, what happens? They get fucking cancer, okay? So look, it's not like they were just like being, oh, we're like fat cat environmental regulators, and we're just going to shut these guys down.
Don't hurt the feelings of the fish.
It's like, I know, exactly. It's not like they were prioritizing fish over people. They were trying to keep people from getting fucking cancer, you asshole. Okay? So
Excuse me.
All right, so there's that. And then anyway, like they cleaned up the water and there weren't as many PCBs, and the environmental regulators said, okay, you can start catching stripers again, but like we're going to put some quotas because you've fished all of the fish out of the fucking sea, okay? And if you take all of the fish out of the fucking sea, there's not going to be any fishermen anymore, okay?
Right.
So we have to do a thing where we only take out a certain number of fish from the goddamn sea, okay? And God, I'm so angry about this. All right. And so like the one place where
you're
think,
on fire.
I'm
you
on
are
fire.
On fire about this.
I didn't start it.
You didn't start it.
So the one place where I think that they had like maybe a legitimate beef was the way that the quotas were administered is there was a separate quota for commercial fishing and for sport fishing. Okay. And, you know, right around this time that the song was written, the quota was much higher for sport fishermen than it was for commercial fishermen.
That doesn't make any sense.
It makes all the sense in the goddamn world.
Tell
okay?
me why.
Because what is bringing in more money to the fucking local economy? Okay. Mm. Rich assholes who want to spend $10,000 to catch one fish. Okay. Or, you know, a guy that goes out there in a net and picks up a bunch of fish and then sells them to the Gorton's man, you know?
Just the Gorton's fisherman.
Well done.
Thanks.
Joel probably stole that for a song too somewhere. And it is sad. It's sad when, like, you know, an industry has to die, right, for legitimate reasons, and people lose a way of life. That is sad. And if he had just wanted to make a comment about that and just be like, hey, it's sad that these guys don't have can't
it
make
wouldn't
a
be Joel
anymore.
Then I mean, okay? he's got to
throw a little tantrum.
He's got to play the victim. He's got to take, you know, the marginalized, the people who he thinks that he is a part of, but he hasn't been a part of since he was 19.
Exactly.
You know, it's this guilt that he has that he lives in the Hamptons and then lies about it. And I'm like, dude, it's fine. You have two houses. You're allowed. And then, you know, I live there year round and I hang out with, you know, fucking fishermen and shit. No, you don't. You probably wave to them on your way to, you know, the polo club. And
it's
then suddenly
so,
you're like,
it's so indicative of everything about Joel's personality and career, which is basically Joel trying to fit in with the other boys.
Oh, yeah.
That's mm-hmm. like what he's doing all the time, yeah. is just trying to fit in with the other boys. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, yeah, hey, guys, are we going to go troll
too,
some nets? Yeah.
You know, real salt of the earth guys. I'm one of them.
So anyway,
no, you're not.
If he had just wanted to like make a comment like it's sad that these guys are having to lose their jobs, that they've taken all the fish out of the sea and that there's no more fish to fish and that they don't have to go and do something else for a living. That's like sad, you know. But then he took it a step further, which was that he and Christy went out and engaged in a protest where like they assembled the media and they fished with this like illegal sort of dragnet method and were immediately arrested for it. Right?
Chrissy's not going to last long in jail.
That's right. Someone is going to make her bitch.
Right? It's not going to end well
first
for her.
Day. Okay.
That's not going to end well for
there,
her.
Someone, one of our fans, I'm sure we'll have fans at
we
this
have
point.
Fans.
I think that at this point in the run, we'll have some fans. Someone's got to make a parody video that's just Orange is the New Black, but with Christy Brinkley going in for illegally fishing, right. Which she didn't even want to do anyway, but Billy made her do it.
Billy made her do it. And I think what really kills me about Billy is he gets a lot of credit for being a songwriter and a storyteller. Mm. He doesn't
story songs.
Just story songs.
He's got to stay sharp. He's going to write them.
He becomes the story, and that's he becomes the fisherman. He becomes the coal miner, and he gets too involved, and it's you know, that's what stops him from being great. Is he's emotionally invested in being this person that he's telling the story about.
It is true. I mean, he did not have to write this song in the first person.
Right. And right? He didn't have to, you know, decide that he was going to be, you know, a sailor man from here on in. You know, he's going to go mine some coal in Allentown where there's no coal.
Do you think so? We've been looking at this interview where he's in front of his model boats. Do you think that he has like another room that's like his coal room?
Right? I'm going to put on my coal miner hat. It's got a little light on it. Alexa, where's my coal miner pick? I don't know why I'm making him sound like that.
He would do like a West Virginia folk song on his next record.
He's all about
this
that cosplay.
Because Obama, you know, he's trying to shut these coal miners down.
Right,
okay,
right?
It's just because they're not like politically environmentally correct.
Right,
okay,
exactly.
They're trying to make a living by mining coal. Excuse me. Joel is going to make America great again.
Right. He's going to have a stick with bad economic policy just so he can write story songs.
Little
right, the time has come to acknowledge our first sponsor on today's program, for whom we're really grateful for their support. And the first sponsor is Gina's Palace of Wigs off of Exit 16 on the Long Island Expressway in Terryville. You'll be treated like a queen at Gina's Palace of Wigs.
So Gina's a good girl. You go into her palace, and the whole place, it's built like a palace. You go in, and she says, "Welcome to my palace of wigs." So you are going to get long hair, short hair, red hair, black hair, blonde hair, any kind of hair you want.
Shiny hair?
Shiny hair, matte hair. Mm. It's all going to be, Gina has every type of hair. Every type of hair you could possibly want. Dog hair? She's got monkey hair.
She got hair for your dogs?
She's got hair for your dogs. Little wigs.
Little wigs.
Little tiny wigs.
And it's adorable.
She's talking about getting some wigs for hamsters. Some
hamsters.
Little hamster wigs.
Hamster wigs.
Because, you know, there is a market for people who do want to have wigs for the little rodents.
Mm.
Rodents are really popular now as for some reason as pets. I don't understand it, but everybody do their own thing, all right? I'm not going to judge you. But 15% off your first wig fitting at Gina's Palace of Wigs if you mention you listen to the podcast. She's a good girl. She's a good girl. Go see Gina, okay?
Okay.
Fix that mess on your head. Go see Gina.
I think that you went into your Dorchester accent.
I did,
there.
Yeah, sorry. I
can't. All right, people!
For anybody who'd like to know, a Weird Al Yankovic just came up under Adam's recommendations on YouTube.
It's probably because of all the Billy Joel we've been watching on YouTube.
You are a big old Weird Al Yankovic fan.
I bet that there's a pretty substantial Venn diagram between Joel fans. Oh, what are we listening to now?
Oh, we are listening to Shameless.
Shameless!
Shameless! I just love you so much, Chrissy!
You know what I'm realizing as I just listened to this intro? Is that if you listen back to the complete Joel, the Joel-vra, he is so reliant on sequences, melodic sequences. A melodic sequence is when you do a little melody, you know, dum 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 dum, right? And then you just move it up or down and do it again, you know, dum 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 dum. And the thing about sequences is that it's like they can sound really silly when you take them too far. Bum 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 bum. Yum dum 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 dum. Lum dum 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 dum. Right?
And it's,
exactly, that's right. And that's he has so many songs that are just like, I've got a little melody. Now I'll bring it up here. Then I'll bring it up here. Right?
Like, now I'm bringing it back down
there. And that's the end of the phrase, right? It's really very lazy when you think about it, but this one seems particularly lazy to me. Listen back.
I don't know why it needs such a long intro. I think we're at 20 seconds now.
Well, he's got to feel the groove, you
right,
know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is a sexy song.
But I'm shameless. When it comes to love.
Shameless.
That's his sexy voice.
This is how I live my life.
I do anything at all.
Like anything. I grab him by the pussy, you know?
Here for all the world to see. Oh, there ain't that much left for me.
Vocally, this is different than his other stuff.
How so?
I don't know. There is this sort of pop ballad, just. It doesn't. You sound like normal Joel.
Normal Joel.
Do a
normal Joel.
But this one has more.
Well, there's a reason why. Okay. If you know where he got the idea for the song from, he was trying to write a Hendrix song.
Oh.
Yeah. So he was like, and I'm shameless, Al. That's not really a. Hold on, that's not really a.
Wow, is Jimi Hendrix in this building with us?
That didn't really work, did it?
Wow,
that really didn't work. But he was trying to sound like a sexy black guy who's kind of doing Sprechstimme, you know?
Okay.
Sprechstimme. What?
I don't know what that is.
It's German for speech sing.
Oh, Okay.
Duh.
Duh. Dummy. God.
So, and it totally makes sense that, like, that's where it would be his, like, where he's starting off from, and that what he would eventually end up arriving at would be perfectly encapsulated or perfectly channeled by another gentleman.
Yes. Our good friend Garth Brooks.
Oh, such a good friend.
Such a good friend.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. I've known him since his first communion. He used to be wicked fat.
Used to be?
It's all that country cooking.
So the audio of this file of Garth Brooks singing Shameless is really messed up. And I noticed...
You can hear the ghosts of people underneath there. And, no, Garth, no.
And the reason I realized, because I went looking for a better one, is like Garth Brooks has done a really good job of purging YouTube,
you know, it's
of
actually,
all of his songs.
It's all on Amazon now.
Oh, yes, that's why.
Yep. They just released it yesterday.
Okay. Well, I could find that.
But it's not worth it.
I'm not going to do that. Mm-mm. So let's listen to Garth do what this song was really meant to be.
This is a perfect song for Garth. This is a perfect country song.
Yeah.
Billy did try to make, like, you know, a black song, and he couldn't, and he ended up with pop country, which is far and away the worst kind of music, I think, in the entire universe
ever.
There's
something incredibly perfect about that.
Yeah. It's, I mean,
that's exactly, that's, it says everything.
Yeah. I mean, Billy could have a second career writing shitty country ballads.
Maybe he has.
Maybe he has.
Maybe that's what he's been doing since 1990, whatever.
That, like, would be awesome. I mean,
he's just been ghostwriting terrible songs for Nashville.
He'd probably call himself like something like Tex Ryder or something like that. He'd really live the life. He'd move down to Austin and he'd be made friends with, like, people who had, like, kangaroo farms or something, and then he'd write songs about them. They're just trying something new. New economic, you know.
I know. But, like, Jesus.
It's a great protein.
The freaking, the regulators with the, these people in the kangaroo farms, it's a way of life they've been doing for 300 years.
For 300 years. People don't
They've been catching kangaroos been with nets.
In Austin, Texas.
Excuse me.
Excuse me. But the king really didn't enough information. It's time to acknowledge our second sponsor today, the International Brotherhood of List Songwriters.
List Songwriters, yes. This is a really important organization, and they're doing really important work.
Mm.
I don't know if you know this, but say, you know, your man, okay, who's trying to support his family by writing list songs, you know, as you've done for hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years.
Catching them with a net.
Didn't find any list songs today, honey. We're not going to eat dinner. No shoes for Billy.
So say you're just trying to do that, you know? I mean, it's an honorable day's work.
Right.
And say you write a song, it's, you know, it kind of goes, you know, you could kind of just, like, list the U.S. presidents, you know, like George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, you know? And you could kind of go, like, you know, James Monroe, JQA, Andrew Jackson all the way.
Man, that, you know? I like that.
It's a good song, So say, you know, you knock that one out at the factory,
mm-hmm.
and then somebody comes along, some jagoff comes along and writes a song that's kind of like, you know, George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, James Monroe, JQA, Andrew Jackson, hey, hey, hey.
Sue him.
You can't.
Why?
Because the copyright laws in this country, they're so messed up. They're so messed up, okay?
Oh, there's no justice for the working man.
It's like, what is this, like a third world country or something? You can't copyright a song that's a list of all the U.S. presidents?
Right.
Okay? It's outrageous. It's outrageous.
What are we going to do?
We got to join the International Brotherhood of List Songwriters, okay? Because they're working Congress. They're trying to get this fixed, okay? Because if you write a song that's just like a list of something, I mean, I suppose you could do, you know, just like a list of, like, the periodic table, right? Like, you could do, like, you know, lithium, potassium, hydrogen, Cesium, right?
I'm going to put that song on at parties.
Yes, you could do that. If you do that, you should be able to copyright the periodic table of elements, okay? You should be able to own the names of every U.S. president recited in sequence. You should be able to copyright that and make a living from it.
But apparently you can't, so apparently what are we going to do?
You got to join the Brotherhood, you got to pay your dues, and we're going to get send our lobbyists up there, and we're going to get rights for these people so that their 300-year-old way of life can be respected and it can endure, and Billy can have his fish sticks.
I hear they're good guys. I hear they're good guys, the International Brotherhood. I hear they're good guys. Really look out for the working man?
But don't write a list song and not join the Brotherhood, because they're going to beat the shit out of you. Fucking pillowcases of quarters.
Heard you got a list song. Didn't clear with us. Jackie, grab the pillowcase.
They're going to send Rocky from Rocky 1 to break your thumb.
He's got dreams beyond thumb breaking.
Okay, 5, 4. Living here in Allentown.
So there's other famous songs on this stupid record. There's I Go To Extremes, which like has some serious drumming from Liberty.
Ah, he's good.
He's on the twos and the fours.
He's on the twos and the fours. Not the ones and the threes. He's on the twos and the fours.
That's where the rock is.
That's where the rock is.
Yeah.
Yep.
You got to watch the video for I Go To Extremes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, 1989 called. And
they want everything back?
Everything back.
Everything.
Everything back.
Okay. That's not why I wanted to watch this video, though. I want to watch this video because there's this phenomenon that happens when rock stars reach a certain point. I call it band sprawl.
Band sprawl.
Band sprawl. Where, like, you just start to have way more people on the band than you need. Right? Look at how many fucking people are in this band. And some of them are just, like, shaking maracas. You know, like, I don't hear a maraca in this song, okay?
There are a lot of people.
There's a lot of people in this, like, you know, in this downtown warehouse where they're filming this video.
Yep.
And there's a guitar player who's, like, clearly, like, a really high class, like, fashion, like, high fashion model.
Right.
Who, there she is.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, with, like, a pixie cut, like, and it's just, like, it's like prop band members, because they're also very diverse, you know? There's just way too many people. Like, this
yeah,
is
there's
like
75
like,
people
this is
behind
like a
him.
Guitar, bass, and drums song. Like, you could play this song with three fucking people, you know?
But how can he show, like, he's having a great time with
yeah,
his,
then he's
with
got a lot of friends.
Right.
He has so many friends.
So many friends. I knew all these guys from high school.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we've been together for a long time. Yeah, that I don't think that the pixie cut lady is actually playing anything.
I don't think so either.
I think there are like three bass players.
Well, when Dougie Staggs dies, it takes a lot of guys to replace Dougie. Okay,
Dougie is equal to at least three
bass players twice his size.
Right, and a maraca player.
Yeah,
I kind of expect like Cindy Crawford to walk past and like just like.
Drinking a 7-Up.
Drinking a Pepsi, because she was like doing Pepsi.
She was on Team
then.
Pepsi?
She was on Team Pepsi.
She was in the Rock and Roll Cola Wars.
Rock and roll!
I have to say, that's like the one line of We Didn't Start the Fire that actually has like emotional resonance for me. Is like, the Rock and Roll Cola Wars, I can't take it anymore! I don't know why I want to do Wolfman Jack when I sing that song, but it just seems perfect. But anyways, that's like the one line that has emotional resonance, because it's like, you know, he grew up like sincerely idolizing people like Ray Charles and Little Richard. And to see them doing competing cola commercials, would be disenchanting.
It's interesting to think of what's going on now, and if he did an update to We Didn't Start the Fire for now, how much more depressing it would be.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd have to talk about Syria. He'd have to talk about a lot of shit.
Exactly.
It wouldn't be Cola Wars, bro.
Yeah. It would be 9/11 happened.
9/11.
And I just...
and I'm done.
And I had to drive my car into a tree. Exactly. I mean,
I had to drive my Corvette into that person's living room.
Bin Laden made me do it.
Bin Laden, 9/11.
Yeah.
9/11.
Yeah. I read that he actually, like, people on his management told him when they would go out on subsequent tours after Stormfront came out, and, you know, he didn't have any new songs, so he had to play the old ones. Like, they would say, like, could you, like, update We Didn't Start the Fire? Like, take it to 1998 or something. And he was just like, nah. Nah, bro.
Nah. No. This is when my brain shut off.
That would exactly. That's right.
This is when I became old fat Sat Joel, and I don't want to document my descent.
I still belong. Don't get me wrong. You can speak your mind, but not on my tongue. Damn it!
All right, after a rocker like that, you're going to need a slow dance song.
A slow jam. A couple skate.
So what is And So It Goes about?
Before he married Christy, he was with Elle McPherson. Mm. And Elle McPherson was like 19 at the time.
Yeah.
Which is real creepy.
Because
He was probably like 500.
So I will share this room with you. And you can have this heart to break.
Again, because he's so consumed with his own victimhood and thinking about himself as the child in any given situation, it's like he forgets that he's like a 34-year-old man dating an 18-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
And he somehow casts himself as the victim in this?
Yeah, yeah. And not only that, he's been the victim throughout time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, you're going to leave me because everybody else has. I mean, this is like a drunk... It's like being with a drunk friend who has had way too much at the end of the night, and they're just like, my love life, just it's self-pitying to an extent that you're just like, are you serious?
And again, it's that classic Dan Savage line, like, you know, if every relationship that you're in is a complete disaster, maybe you should look at the common denominator, which is you.
Right, you know? Right. And he's talked about how he put this song at the end as the calm after the storm.
Right.
Because we just got seriously rocked. And
oh, yeah.
And now we're going to need to be sad for a minute.
Mm. As you are after a storm.
As you are after a storm
after
or rock.
Yeah.
But it is very self-pitying to the...
You can almost feel him unfurling the flag. No, refurling the flag. He's just like, I've been waving this like backpack flag on deck this whole time. I got super wet, okay? And now it's time to put the flag away.
Yep. It's time for everybody to go home. Go home.
Yeah. Got a big old catch of list songs I gotta bring to market.
I've got some recipes I'm going to turn into songs.
Cup of sugar, cup of flour.
Bake it at 350 and you're going to have a cake.
I can't take it anymore.
She's my uptown girl. You know that you are. I'm in love with an uptown girl.
It's time now to visit Christie's Corner.
Christie's Corner.
Christie's Corner.
So Christy and Billy have been married for a while by this time. They've got a daughter named Alexa, and Christy isn't really known for her humor.
Mm.
She has since been on Parks and Rec as a character's, you know, crazy hot wife, a character that you would never think has a crazy hot, you know, wife. But she's not a great actress.
Welcome, everybody, to another Gurgitch Christmas.
But so she's from Malibu, California, and
she's not a great actress.
She's not a great actress.
But she's from Malibu, California.
She's from Malibu, California.
So, like, she's got that going for her.
She's got some shiny as fuck hair.
Yeah. Shiny as fuck.
So there was this People magazine special presentation of, and this whole thing just cracks me up, of like, Billy and Christy are living in the Hamptons and having this wonderful life and da-da-da-da-da. And Christy does an impression of Billy, and it's pretty awesome.
Before we get to that, can we watch the beginning of the video?
Yes, please.
Do
People celebrates the natural fascination we have for each other.
We love each other.
Do each other. Have babies with each other. And read about each other.
Because it's perfectly natural.
It's perfectly natural.
It's so natural. There's no reason to be ashamed
of reading this magazine.
With Michael Jackson on it. Look at that.
They later say that future historians will read this magazine to see what's going on in the world. Like, God help us if they do. Forget the Atlantic. Forget.
All right, let's go to the Joel joke.
Joel joke.
He, you know, kind of talks, you know, sometimes with the New York thing, you know, especially if he's around his friends. And I can't even do a New York accent.
You're
I don't even know why
girl.
I'm trying.
Well, we don't know why you're trying either, Christy. We don't know why.
Always blaming on his friends, guys. Yeah. So impressionable.
I know. Hanging out with his friends. He doesn't have friends, Christy. He has you.
Not for long.
Not for long. Aw.
This has been Christy's Corner.
Christy's Corner.
Christy's Corner.
Time to update the Joel Power Rankings.
Power Rankings.
Power Rankings.
So I guess Stranger is still at number one. Innocent mm-hmm. Man is at two. Where did we put the last stupid record, The Bridge to Nowhere?
The Bridge to Nowhere went to 11. So that is behind...
This album goes to 11 is what you're saying?
The Bridge goes to 11, but it doesn't. It's really sad.
Yeah. It goes to negative 11. This amp goes to negative 11. By the way, because I was just so fascinated by Joel playing the guitar... Like I watched more clips of him like playing We Didn't Start the Fire and trying to play the guitar, and it's like, and he's like doing things to that guitar and they are not in the mix. Okay,
call the cops.
The total
a duck is doing math and Joel is playing guitar. What's going on here?
Sound guy is totally taking that guitar and taking it to negative 11. It was just like, yep, we're just gonna let you do whatever you want there, and yeah, just be quiet about it.
Rock and roll.
Anyways, where do you want to put the Storm Front?
Well, he's got... I wonder if we should put it above Nylon Curtain, above number four. So we want to push Nylon Curtain to five and then put this to four, so it'd be underneath Glass Houses.
What is the argument for putting... Why is Storm Front better than the Nylon Curtain?
Well, it's got... some very definitive Joels.
Nylon Curtain doesn't have definitive Joels. It's got Allentown and Pressure. What are you talking about?
But this one has We Didn't Start the Fire and I Go to Extremes and Down Easter Alexa. So he's got some really...
It has more hits on it.
Yeah,
that's
it
true.
Does.
And it was certainly a more successful album.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so... It's so cheap. It's so cheesy. Don't you think
it's
so?
It's very... Record is? Yeah.
You know?
It is.
It's very fluffy, whereas like with Nylon Curtain, he was like, I'm going to make a serious statement. And you know how it's a serious statement? I'm going to make it sound like the Beatles, and I'm going to use the studio as an instrument.
Right. Okay, so what if we put it...
In all seriousness, I just think that Allentown and Pressure are... even if those were the only two songs on the album, those songs are so much better than anything that is on Stormfront that I just don't feel like I could put Stormfront above Nylon Curtain.
Okay, we're going to go with you. So do you want to do five?
Okay. Fuck you.
No.
We're just going to do it your way. Yeah.
God damn it. Smash.
Let me do my show.
For Christ's sake, let me do the fucking podcast.
I'm going to throw a piano at you. Keyboard in your face.
Didn't we see another video where he flipped the thing and it fell on the audience? That's or right. Did I dream that?
No, I'm dreaming
about Joel.
We did a whole bit about how it was like Gallagher. Like,
yeah,
right?
Like you get a keyboard in your face rather than a watermelon.
First four rows, yeah.
First four rows, you're going to leave paralyzed.
Good times. I would be comfortable with putting it between Nylon Curtain and 52nd Street.
Okay.
In the fourth position.
I'm good with that.
Okay.
So in the fifth position.
Yes.
So Nylon Curtain
yes.
would be...
Nylon Curtain before...
Stormfront
would be five, 52nd Street would be six.
Okay. Should we go ahead and tell everybody where everything is?
No.
All right, fine.
God! This is the penultimate episode.
They should be keeping up by now.
And we're going to do the unveiling of the master list at the end, because that would be the definitive list.
It would be
We're going to come down from the mountain, chiseled on rock tablets, the whole power rankings
list. We got
list.
Two pieces of rock about how you're going to live your life.
That's right.
Rock and roll.
Then we're going to throw them at you like Charlton Heston. Charlton Heston and Joel. That's where it comes from. Right. He's being Charlton Heston in that Bible movie.
He is.
Those who shall not live by the law shall die by the law. Keyboard in your face.
Take your golden calf, Moscow.
I'm moving out.
You guys, it's our next episode is going to be our last episode.
One. So sad.
So sad.
Oh my gosh.
It's River of Dreams, which is even sadder.
It really is. That is a sad ass album.
There is a great song on it called Lullaby, which if I ever hear, like it just makes me cry. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm in the grocery store, at the dry cleaners. It's called Goodnight, My Angel. In quotes, next to Lullaby. I love when artists
do that. Those parenthetical things?
Yeah,
no. Exactly.
Yep.
My ideas are so big they can't be contained in one title.
Exactly.
I got to have double titles.
I need to refine it to, you know, a greater level. And, of course, it's got River of Dreams on it. And Christy.
And a bunch of other fucking songs, I guess.
A bunch of other fucking songs. I don't really know.
Yeah.
Sort of. Christy painted the cover art. And it looks like Christy painted the cover art.
We didn't do Joel's words of wisdom.
Oh, we didn't do words of wisdom. How could we forget these words of wisdom? I mean, this is Pete Billy. We didn't start the fire. No, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it.
We tried.
We lost.
We lost.
Because everything leaves you in the end.
Destroy the
like El McPherson. Everything just ends up shit. I need to get a drink, get in my car, and
drive it
and
into some lady's house.
And then blame 9/11.
It's a big to-do list.
It's a big to-do. I need to call my friend Rudy Giuliani to get me out of this ticket.
People, thank you for listening to the program. I'm Adam Ragusa. I don't really like Billy Joel.
I'm Meg Donahue, and I really do. Do you have a thought? Do you have a dream producer that you would like Billy to work with? He has gone through some producers. Let us know using the hashtag JoelHole on Twitter. Would you pair him up with if it's a date night? when Billy opens the door, who's gonna be his magic date producer?
You know, everybody has a dream.
A dream producer.
And this is what they dream about. Meg on the Twitter is at Donahue Meg, and I am at A Ragusa. This program that we do here generates no value for anyone. So if you feel that you're owed money from it, please don't come talking to us, because we have nothing for you. And besides, we're totally within our fair use rights to be doing what we're doing.
Yeah, some of our sponsors are real businesses, but they're not actually our sponsors. It's just a joke, and they wouldn't have us anyway. I like Billy to work with a producer who did, like, the Apex Twins shit. I'm like, no. Trent Reznor and Billy Joel. They have to do, like, a soundtrack to a movie about a murdered girl from Long Island. Well, she was 17. And there the pig's head comes flying.
You're just going there.
I'm just going there. This is happening. This is what my brain is like all the time. Bang, bang, what's up? Ching, 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 bong, bong, bong. Everybody does drums.